You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at NoPlotOnlyLore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
All right, welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore.
No, keep going.
No.
I'm gonna let you cook.
It's too goofy. Go ahead.
Oh, there's a guy that I have been seeing some YouTube clips from. I don't think it's actually his character. Like he does a let's play type or like an actual play.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Podcast. But one of the characters that he voices, I think, is just a bit that he was doing where, like, there was this dead clown and they saw the ghost of the dead clown and he just started talking like this.
Oh, I think I've seen this one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he takes out, yeah, and they've done some cartoons of, like, him taking the gun out of his mouth.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. This recurring, yeah. Oh, God. Some of it is so goddamn funny.
Some of it is so good. And some of it is kind of cringe, but occasionally the cringe helps sell other humor, so I'm here for it.
Still,
but I actually thought it was his character for a while.
Yeah, still not enough to make me watch an actual play podcast, but
not his. Like,
yeah,
I watch a lot of them. Fuck, I've been picking up so many of them recently. I started listening to Brennan Lee Mulligan's other podcast.
Oh, is it? Like, not the DM one, but...
No, the Worlds Beyond Number.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just, like, it's him and Lou and Abria and... Why can't I remember her name? Erica?
Ishii?
Doing a thing. Yeah. Yeah, they're doing a thing, so...
Is it the actual play thing?
Yeah, but it's, like, all audio. Like, there's no video attached to it.
Yeah.
So, it's... been the thing I've been listening to instead of NADPOD for the last little bit.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I just, the only time I ever got into any actual play thing was back in the day when Penny Arcade was doing it, and it was a novel experience, and ever since then they just make me want to cringe up inside my own body part.
I find that, like, that happens to me for the first episode of any that I'm watching. And then once I have that first episode out of the way, I'm good.
Yeah, I can't. Well, and part of it too, I think, for me is I just can't do like that long form of a content anymore. I just don't have the time in my day to sit and listen to an hour and a half episode or whatever it happens to be. Like, if it was,
I
like,
always break mine up.
Well, yeah, but I also can't do that. I can't jump in and out of something and keep like things in my brain.
Yeah, it's my bus company.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And see, that's the difference. You ride the bus, and I drive in 20-minute spurts. Like, I get through, let's say, podcasts about board games because they have, like, segments. And it's like, okay, we've completed this section about, I don't know, hegemony or Septima, and then I can just kind of, like, move on and come back. And, oh, here's the new game that we're talking about or whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, bits aside, let's do a podcast.
Okay, if I have to.
You don't. I've offered multiple times.
No, sunk cost, I'm already in here. Okay.
I feel guilty. I'm literally feeling guilty that I'm making you
don't
do this,
feel,
even though
no.
I'm not making you.
You're
do
absolutely
it.
Not making it. It's fine. It's fine. We wanted to talk about creating cool characters. We're going to talk about creating cool characters. End of sentence.
I feel like I wanted to talk about creating cool characters.
You wanted to talk,
like,
about
whatever.
Anything, and this was the only subject that caught my interest with no notice. There's no notes, people. All There's right. no notes. It's just five sentences.
Good. Good, good, good.
Okay.
So let's talk about some cool fucking characters, I guess.
Yeah, this is something that I actually did a lot more of, I'm going to say it again, in fourth edition, because I was a lot more invested in fourth edition. Not because like fourth edition was better or anything. I just had more time in my life to think about Dungeons and Dragons, like specifically. I was like less of a broken shell of a man and had more creativity. But yeah, characters and concepts and weird ideas and stealing them from places was something that I did all the time.
Well, and like, I also have done a lot more of this in previous phases of my role-playing game career, mostly because I am a forever DM. And so like right now, I haven't had a lot of opportunities to sit down and create a character and like build cool ideas for characters. Like I obviously come up with the cool characters that happen as NPCs and stuff.
Yeah.
But those have a very different vibe on character creation. So we're taking off the DM hat today a little bit and going to be looking at like how to build a cool player character with the understanding that I'm a little rusty.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I've had to create a few more characters recently for various things. So I'm like a little more limber in the creativity department right now.
All right.
Does that make sense?
So why don't you tell us about your current player character?
Sure. So, I have, I would say, three active characters, one active campaign. Does that make sense?
You've got like three characters that are ready to go whenever and like one campaign that's actually happening on the regular.
There's a campaign that has been on a hiatus for 3 years now, at least. Possibly longer. I'm trying to remember, but it was definitely... Oh, no, it's a lot more than 3 years. Okay, never mind. You know what?
We're sure it's a hiatus?
I think at this point it might actually be dead.
Oh, no.
There's one that has been on about a year-long hiatus. They're trying to restart it right now. So I'm going to... I'll talk about two characters because they're actually kind of active. So the first is the one that I play most frequently right now. It is... I don't know if I want to... Fine. His name is Abraham Goldbergstein.
We've talked about Abe before.
And Abe is a retired jeweler, Hasidic Jewish man whose wife has kicked him out of the house because he is annoying her and told him to go find a way to get his crucible refired and get back to tinkering so that he's not just sitting around the house moping and annoying her. He is a we'll call him a sorcerer in name mostly. He does have one level of cleric, but the whole idea was based around a guide I found to recreating the warlord class in fifth edition. And the way it works mechanically for him is that, well, not mechanically, sorry, thematically through the mechanics, but the idea is he's not actually doing anything. He keeps begging Jehovah for help and, you know, having God intervene on his behalf by flinging his friends into combat and granting bonuses to other people around him while keeping him, the frail old man, safe. His is the most straightforward. My other character, you know what? I'll just give you the honest source of this character.
I'm already a little bit concerned about canceling based on Abe.
Okay, no, this one is this somehow better, but
okay. Weirder. Like I'm just imagining that it's somebody that like kidnaps halflings and keeps them in a sack or something. Like
closer than I'd like to admit, but no. Kakirk is an Arakocra druid who the entire basis for the character was trying to essentially make the Central Park pigeon lady from Home Alone 2 in D&D. lots of summoning birds, and the birds are all pigeons. Like, I talked to my DM, just let me reskin giant owls as pigeons. Also,
not even the pigeon guy from, like, John Wick.
Nope.
Or, like, any of the other various New York pigeon guys. It's specifically the old lady from Home Alone 2.
Yeah. Yeah. And not just like
fantastic.
Not just like the reality of the old lady from Home Alone 2, but like the creepy, terrifying version that Macaulay sees in the park before he gets to know her.
Okay.
And so Kirk is like kind of smelly and weird and has a habit. Cause so fun thing about low-level druids is that if you're playing a race that can fly, that ability does not let you shapeshift into a species that can fly. So because you don't have that ability yet, you can fly yourself over the battlefield and then shapeshift yourself into the biggest animal that your CR limit will allow and essentially treat yourself as a cruise missile.
So you're just like flying over some unsuspecting goblins, turning into an owl bear and squishing them all.
Well, given the theme of this character, I've chosen a number of large flightless birds to transform into midair.
Is the owl bear a flightless bird? Like, is that?
I think an owl bear is like a feathered bear, not like a quadruped bird. Does that make sense? So
I mean, it does, but I don't know if I agree.
Okay, but also it is more than CR 1/4 or 1/2, which I think is my current limit.
Right.
So okay. I fly as high as I can over top of the whatever I was fighting that first combat, and turned into an emu, and dropped that from 40, 50 feet up.
Fun fact: I went to the Tyrell Museum last year. And they had a thing that you could step on that would weigh you and tell you how heavy an animal you would be, like which animal your weight would be.
Yeah.
And I came in as an ostrich at 280 pounds. So 280 pound bird falling from the fucking sky.
I think I would come in the neighborhood of like a breeding pair of ostriches, maybe.
I can't remember what everybody got. Thor got a seal. He's a seal.
Okay. That actually, I want to make the drive just to see what the kids are the animal equivalents of.
It was a great trip for me, and Thor had no fun at all. I think I appreciate dinosaurs a whole lot more as an adult than I would have as a kid. And
oh, yeah.
I made the mistake of showing my kid Jurassic Park after we went to the Tyrell Museum. And after that, he had a much greater appreciation for dinosaurs. So I probably should have done that in the reverse order.
Oh, good work.
I also
have figured out what the answer will be for me. I just kind of Googled what animal weighs about my weight on average. So it looks like I, depending on how you perceive me and animals, I would either be a saltwater crocodile or, a lion, cheetah, tiger, and zebra combined, apparently.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Some sort of horrible chimeric beast. Josh weighs as much as a chimera.
Never mind.
Established that Josh weighs as much as a chimera.
Never mind. This question was just unbelievably poorly worded. I weigh as much as a lion. So I could either be a lion or a saltwater crocodile.
Both proud and noble animals in their own rights.
Also apex predators, which I feel also describes me.
Yep. I don't know if I would consider myself ostrich-like in many ways.
You are flightless.
I am flightless.
Yeah.
That is true. And I do walk on two legs.
So
okay, I think I have enough in common with the ostrich that that I'm just going to roll with it.
You are 100% ostrich.
I'm catering to our furry fans right now. If you want to make a bunch of like feathery art of me as an ostrich, you have my full permission.
Let me off this podcast. I don't want.
Anyway, cool characters.
Anyways, yeah, those are the two I'm playing primarily right now.
Those are the two you're playing right now. All right.
So you can kind of see where my inspirational brain wanders all over the countryside.
You start with a bit, as far as I can tell.
No, one time.
No? Okay.
The Abraham started as 4th edition was the best edition, and I can prove it because of Warlords. And then
right.
Kirk started because of a bit.
Okay. Because, like, Abraham feels very much like a bit. Like, start to finish. The fact that he is a Hasidic Jewish man in the, like, Forgotten Realms.
Yeah.
Is a choice that you made?
Well, my favorite part of the bit is that once a week, the rest of the party has to just carry me around on the dog sled that we have because I refuse to do any work.
Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe we might not be the best people to be talking about this subject.
Well, I mean, creativity comes from all sorts of places. A character that I played for years, the entire inspiration for the character was I was just thinking about the phrase half orc and then was like, hey, what if that was literal? And my guy was literally half of an orc.
Right.
And then it evolved into
left half or right half.
Well, that's the thing. The character concept, like none of these are first drafts, which actually is probably more concerning. but like that character became not just like the idea was like, yeah, okay. What if like a bad field surgeon just sewed two incorrect parts together and now you are half an orc. And then that evolved into, what if like a bad amateur Dr. Frankenstein just kind of collected whatever was most useful from a battlefield and sewed all of those together. And then by reanimating it sort of took the long way around and gave the characters like a mild form of dissociative identity disorder. Because all of the souls got pulled out of the afterlife and into that character because it was alive again.
Brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's interesting. Where did the core of that concept come from for you? Like, did you steal that from Frankenstein to begin with, or was it just like thinking about half-orcs in general and all of the various ways you could interpret that?
It was mostly thinking about, so I was like, I don't draw, but I just kind of doodle sometimes. And the phrase half-orc was in my head. And I was thinking about half-orcs and, like, weirdly enough, like, super mutants from Fallout 4.
Okay.
And just, like, that kind of, like, there's an intelligence there, but, like, not a lot. And on the orc side, right? And I was like, well, what if, like, that dumb creature was half of the equation, and you had to sort of negotiate the functionality of all right. So there's another partial inspiration that I feel a lot worse about, and this will probably get us canceled.
Oh, God damn it.
So how much time do you spend watching like TLC and their like freak show programs?
I haven't had cable in like 25 years.
Okay.
I don't even know what's on TLC. I would not be able to recognize one of their shows.
They're on the internet. I mean, they have lots of stuff. But one show in particular caught my attention about a pair of twins named Abby and Brittany.
Okay. Abby, I don't know if I like where this is going.
Abby and Brittany are conjoined twins. And the nature of their configuration is that essentially they just look like a two-headed woman. Mechanically, they each operate an arm and have to, like, contend with that. And, like something as simple as, so they're an elementary school teacher. And I'm trying to get, the pronoun usage correct, because they are two independent people who get paid a single salary but had to get two different degrees.
I mean, that's fucked up for a bunch of different
reasons. Oh, yeah, it's wild. But then, you see them interacting with kids, and you realize something as simple as clapping your hands had to be, a practice and negotiation between the two of them so that it looks somewhat normal and still mechanically claps their hands. And so that problem was something that I had in my head when the idea of half an orc came about. And I was like, what if you had to negotiate with your own body parts to make locomotion happen? And as an adventurer, in a system like D&D that's so based around combat, what happens? Mm-hmm. What happens if your thighs go on strike?
I don't feel like we're being treated equally right now, Lefty.
Well, exactly. And then so that I it started as just the two personalities, and then being the goofball, yes, and I don't actually want to improvise, but I'm going to improvise all the time person that I am, I started thinking about what would happen if you had more personalities in that equation. So now, my right arm is human, my left arm is an orc, my right leg is a dwarf, and my left leg is an elf, stuff like that. And then all of those personalities being in the head and having to negotiate control. And eventually coming to an agreement that, okay, in social situations, we're letting the human and the elf take the forefront. In combat situations, it might be the dwarf or the orc. But then all of them... what's that?
We've talked about this character a little bit before. I think one of my favorite ideas that I came up with from that was what happens if the orc just decides that he's going to take over a social interaction?
Right.
Because he could.
And then the other part was, so there's all of that happening where each of them are trying to operate primarily in the host. But then they still have to operate as a collective with individual identities when negotiating with their deity, the Raven Queen. Who has, taken affront to the idea that people can pull people out of her realm and reanimate bodies.
Which, I mean, not your fault.
No, not at all my fault. But it's one of those situations where this isn't your fault, but it is your responsibility.
Right.
So, yeah.
I think all of that kind of comes back to, the first point that I put on here.
Yeah.
On the notes that don't exist.
Yeah.
Is steal everything.
Yes.
Right. For inspiration for your characters, my characters tend to be pretty one note when I'm playing. And part of the reason for that is that usually when I'm playing, it's because one of my players has chosen to DM.
Right.
And they're just trying out the DMing for the first time. And so I feel like it's my responsibility to take very much a back seat. Right. I take over games very quickly when I'm a player because I have a big personality. I'm used to directing the actions of multiple entities within the game. And so if I just let myself go, then it becomes the Christopher show, and that's not cool for anybody.
No, for sure.
Well, it's cool for me, but only until the game is over and then I have to deal with all my friends being mad at me.
Right.
I very much take a back seat for everything that I'm doing. And almost every time I'm creating a new character, I'm just stealing a character from something that I've read or something that I've seen recently. Right. And just the bare bones of it.
Yeah.
I'll file off the serial numbers and do my own little spin on it. But my character, almost whole cloth, is usually taken from another piece of media.
Yeah.
Or I'll take two characters from two different pieces of media that I was looking at, and I'll bash them together.
Yeah.
But
I mean, like, that's the thing. It's like my inspirations are unusual at best. I mean, do you remember Bruce, who I was playing in the heavy metal campaign?
Fourth edition?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what the inspiration was for Bruce. That character?
Hair metal?
No, not at all.
Oh.
The inspiration for that character was, I want to play a bard, but I want my instrument to be an electric guitar.
Right.
That was the entirety of the character. And from that, I invented a moshing bellows powered amp and guitar combo and named it after the lead singer / bassist of my favorite band.
Right.
Right? Like that was the whole, there was nothing there. There was no character.
We got there eventually.
There was a piece of equipment with a name.
Yeah. It didn't take very long for that person to become a character.
It's true.
Like even just a few of the discussions that we were having before that game started, we started to flesh out a bit more of who Bruce was.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, like, yeah, like those kernels can be important. And like, you don't have to have a fully fleshed out character before you start playing. Like a lot of role playing games for me is discovery. Yeah. And as a player, I'm discovering who my character is alongside everybody else. Again, that like, I don't want to improv on stage, but I'll definitely improv in my games.
Yeah. I mean, like, if there's one thing I really don't like about like when, if I'm starting a new game with new players or like I'm joining a new game, is when the DM is like, okay, give me your backstory. I'm like, fucking no. No, we're going to learn that together and I'm going to make it up as I go.
There's a bunch of games that actually do some really cool stuff with that. But we were talking about a couple of them when we did the episode about like just running games past you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like 316, Carnage Among the Stars, you learn who your character is through flashbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I generally prefer to do the same thing on my side. Although like I recently posted a link to another podcast on our Facebook group or our Facebook page. And the guy that's DMing in that group is an old DM of mine from like high school.
Okay. Yeah.
And that guy will happily tell you about the 45 page backstory that I wrote him for my character.
No.
That included the invention of an entire country that didn't exist in the setting yet. And like the applications of necromancy that I was going to be utilizing for the greater good of the country.
No. And,
yeah, no, it was fucking brutal. I was that guy. No. Right? Like I wrote myself a novel and then my character died within three sessions.
Good. Because you deserve to die.
Yeah, absolutely.
The number one thing I don't want a player's character to bring to my table is fucking baggage. And that guy packed for a journey, let me tell you.
Yeah, he sure did. And it was a lot. Like he overpacked for sure. He was bringing winter clothes to Hawaii.
Yeah.
But like I've evolved as a player since then where like I can build a character and have a pretty good time.
Yeah.
And again, because I'm just like thiefing my characters from a lot of other places, it's very easy and quick for me to build a character who I can fit into a game.
Yeah.
But that comes with the history of having been the like guy who shows up with a small novel about his character
on
the first day.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Every once in a while, I'll do something a little like over the top. Like, okay, so when I first started playing in fourth edition, the guy whose group I was going to go join was running like a custom setting that he'd been tinkering with for like 20 years and stuff like that. But I wanted to play Goliath, and Goliaths didn't exist in the setting yet because fourth edition had just introduced them. So I was tasked with doing homework on his setting and coming up with where Goliaths existed in the world and why this one had come down to join society after so many years of seclusion.
Right.
And, you know, I came up with, well, actually, here's what I did that is, I don't know. I find I do this because what I'll do is I'll get something that I think is cool and then I will like reverse engineer it to make it functional.
Okay.
I have some names that I use in like online settings, like especially World of Warcraft. You just have to come up with character names all the time. And I just had like names I thought were like cool and unique. So at the time, my main's name was Vainglorious. And I just wanted to use that name again because I'm an uncreative fuck and don't want to have to keep track of dumb fantasy names all the time. And so what I came up with was that, never mind like the usual, the Goliaths live in the mountains, blah, blah, blah. What my justification was is that, in this Goliath tribe, when a young Goliath reaches like their, you know, bar mitzvah, whatever, when they're becoming an adult, up until that point, they don't really have a name. They'll have a family name,
okay,
but that's not like their actual name. And then during the ceremony of their transition to adulthood, the tribal elders will give them a name of their biggest character flaw. And the objective is that you, by the time you are, sorry, you're not ready to like marry and like progress in the tribe until you have basically like worked hard enough to erase that name. And then you will get a new name when you're married.
Neat.
Yeah. And that was all just because I didn't want to change my name.
Right. Yeah. And the amount of homework that you did for that was still significantly less than the binder that I dropped off for one of my first DMs. So, yeah. I guess hint and or tip that is a big one is like keep it to a page.
Be lazy.
At most.
Be lazy.
Yeah, be lazy. Be lazy. Improv more. Go to improv classes. You'll enjoy
Christopher,
it.
Christopher, we're sure. Not just encouraging improv classes.
If you want, you could probably just like start doing improv as a hobby, like start doing comedy improv in front of other people, because that's never made anyone cringe ever. All right, let's talk a little bit. So steal everything, steal from other places,
right?
Create like mishmashes of stuff. We talked a little bit about the places that we've stolen things from. Let's talk about character builds a little bit.
Okay, let's do that.
I hate them.
Oh,
I don't like building characters with a build in mind. Like I'm not one of those people that will like build from like 1 to 20.
Yeah.
And like I almost always just ignore the idea of like a net deck style
right
build.
Right,
like I don't look up like the ideal feats and combos and stuff unless it's for Baldur's Gate 3, but that doesn't count.
That's a video game. That's different.
Yeah, that's I'm role-playing with myself. I can do what I want.
Yeah.
But like for my player characters when I'm playing a role-playing game.
Yeah.
Usually for my build, I'll just pick what I think makes sense for my character.
Okay.
And if there are flaws in that, then that's okay.
Sure. I wholeheartedly agree with your assertion of like don't net deck your character. That being said, there are sometimes things that like you just need help doing. Like if I wanted to recreate a class that isn't in the game anymore.
Yeah.
Like
no, for sure.
That's something that has to happen. But at the same time, yeah, like when it comes to like what my character, so I think for me, a part of the character creation is not just like an interesting person, but I want to try a rough build that I haven't before. Like, I want to,
right.
If I want to play a druid, I want to play, like, I haven't played a druid before, so I want to play a druid that has, you know, something new to offer that, and I feel like the shapeshift into a bear and attack you druid is just boring, right? So I'm doing, like, this summoner animal handler kind of druid thing. But, like, if I was, I haven't played a bard since 4th edition, I know you hate this, but we did look at the College of Mimes the other day, and I thought that was a really funny idea for a character that I might play in the future. I know it's not like an official college, but it's so goofy that it might be worth it. I want to find things that I haven't done before, which is the same way I approach like MMOs, basically. What's a new experience?
My version of that is I will occasionally come across a rules interaction that I haven't seen before.
Right.
And I will build an entire character around that.
Okay.
And so sometimes I will take a look to see if anybody else has like built something similar.
Yeah.
Just to see if I'm totally out to lunch or if the rules interaction doesn't work the way that I think it does. Cause sometimes there's like, that thing where the specificity of the rule that you're looking at doesn't actually interact with the rule that you think it does.
Right.
But like the Throbrarians that I have recently come across, like I've seen barbarians that throw things.
Yeah.
But the interaction with Tavern Brawler that gives you 2x your strength whenever you throw a thing.
Yeah.
As a barbarian is just fucking great.
Yeah.
It's great. I love the idea that I can pick up a bottle in a bar and throw it at somebody and I get 2x my strength modifier on that. I will build a whole ass character around that.
Yeah, you're going to be drifting bar stools across that tavern all night long.
100%. I will be beating a motherfucker with another motherfucker by picking up dwarves and chucking them at other people. To me sounds like a great time.
You just find another willing monk to reenact a fastball special every time and...
Oh, man. Yeah. It's too bad they can't use weapons.
Right?
I guess you can get like a key attuned weapon. There are a few that monks can use.
Any, or just like a... Any basic weapon can be a monk weapon, so just let them use forks.
Right, because when my player was doing that thing with the wrestling, he wanted to use... folding chairs as like a monk weapon.
Yeah, and just reskin it, man. Like, who cares?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I reskinned, what was it, like a club. And I just said, look, this club is going to be essentially part of my arm. I just have like Muay Thai wrist wraps at all times. That's what I am. And he's like, yep, no problem.
So now I feel like when we start our actual play podcast, we are going to have to just recreate the X-Men.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I dibs Colossus right now.
Fuck, that's what I was going to play. I wanted to play the Throbrarian.
No. I don't know why, but I have... Don't force it. I have identified with that Silver Russian for years.
That's the character concept, like the rules interaction that I wanted to play with was that one, although there's a bunch of other really cool ones that I could play with to recreate the X-Men and then like do all of that in a like really standard fantasy campaign setting.
Yeah.
I think that would be a great thing to do in Dragonlance.
Yeah, and it's just like dumb fun. Like, yeah, go ahead and just see this goes back to it. Like, steal all of your character designs. It's fine. Nobody cares. Your ranger can be literally Katniss Everdeen. I don't care. Just as long as that gives you enough of a framework to work off of going forward. Obviously, we're not gonna just recreate the plot of the Hunger Games, but if that's how you want to like approach that character and make decisions as that character is through that framework, fine. At least you're doing something. Like, you're role playing something.
Well, and two things with that is that like, one, no one is going to notice.
No.
Right. Like, if, unless you specifically show up to the table being like, I'm playing Katniss Everdeen.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
Like, nobody is actually going to be like looking for that in the character you're playing. And two, by the time your second session is done, your character is going to be so far removed from where they started that you're going to have like hints of the character that you started with, and they're going to be moving in a completely different direction.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, unless for some reason you're just like the world's laziest role player and have made no interesting decisions, like, yeah, you're not going to be stonewalled by the, you know, the very basic framework you put out there. Again, that's why we say framework. Like, it's a starting point. It's not the whole character.
So one thing I did want to talk about as well, and I think this is like a really important point to hit on.
Yeah.
Is just making sure your characters make sense in your group.
Right.
Because like Dungeons and Dragons is a multiplayer game.
Right.
It is a group activity. Lone wolves are boring and bad.
True. Yeah.
Like, as cool as it may seem on the surface to be that, like, gruff and grumpy character that stands off onto the side and has to be convinced to join the rest of the group, nobody else wants to put any work into convincing you to join the fucking group.
No. Like, and it frankly calls into question why you want to play a role-playing game in the first place.
Like, well, because you want to be cool.
Obviously, we are the coolest people on the planet. But
we're the cool kids and everybody wants to be like us, but they want to be the gruff, angry version of us.
Right. But like, if your objective is to just like be the coolest, winningest wargamer ever, like there's definitely a much better way to do it than Dungeons and fucking Dragons, you know?
Yeah. Well, and like, there are so many different ways that you can get those characters involved,
right,
in stuff. And I think like, the easiest one is always just to care about things.
Yeah.
Because, like, you look at the introduction of Aragorn in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And he seems like the gruff and grumpy loner type. But, like, that guy is there for a reason. And he's there with, like, a very specific drive to include himself with our protagonist.
I was going to say, he seems like it until you know anything about the character at all. Right?
Yeah.
And then the moment he speaks. This guy actually really genuinely gives a shit.
And gives a shit to like a really high degree.
Yes.
He
gives the most shit.
That is a thing that you can steal. And it's actually like a really easy thing to steal for your characters.
Yeah.
Where you just show up, and like, even if you don't have anything else figured out for your character, you show up with your character sheet in hand, and as the DM starts describing shit to you, and as the players start describing what they're doing, find something in that to just love.
Right.
Right. This is a thing that you care about, that you're investing in right away.
Right.
Right. And it doesn't have to be a cool thing. It doesn't have to be like a good thing. Just like if the DM describes that there's a bunch of adorable frogs, now you are a frog person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, maybe not literally, but you definitely love frogs.
No. Yeah, I'm absolutely getting me one of those frogs, and it is going to be the best frog ever, and I'm going to take care of him, and he will be my baby.
Yeah.
Like, that. This is what my character is about for the next 20 minutes. Just, like, investing in and caring about stuff that is in the world immediately gets you more ingrained into the group, especially if the thing that you find to care about is your other players.
Right. Well, it's like, it's fun.
Being the biggest fan of the other people at the table,
right,
is always going to work in your favor.
Yeah. Like, so to your point of, like, the frog or whatever, like, that first character I played, Vayne, one of the most pivotal moments in the whole campaign and in playing that character was, we were, working alongside / against a local, crime syndicate, and the godfather of the syndicate had this, spy / messenger child that was constantly going back and forth and keeping an eye on us and sending messages. He was just this little orphan street rat who had his tongue removed. And And for whatever reason, after a negotiation that happened with them, when the Godfather went to leave our like meeting place, I decided that Vane cared about that kid and like basically like pulled him, like stopped the kid from leaving with the mob boss and said, "You're staying with me," and like put him on his shoulder. And then for the rest of the campaign, that kid rode around on me like Master Blaster. and I was, Vane was like training that kid to be a class that doesn't exist anymore, a seeker, which is like a ranger but with thrown weapons. Because this little kid was used to like whipping rocks at windows and stuff like that to get people's attention because he couldn't yell. Like, I mean, couldn't talk, whatever. Anyways, yeah. Just like having an investment in some dumb little story element that wound up like shaping the character.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, further to the point of making sure your character fits within the group, this isn't as much of a concern in fifth edition. In fourth edition, sorry, I'm saying mechanically, like
Your niches.
Yeah, in fourth edition, they had four very clearly defined archetypes that needed to be filled. You needed a leader, you needed a tank, you needed a striker, you needed a controller, and they filled specific battlefield purposes. That's not as strictly true in fifth edition. You know, you still don't want five wizards, but
I would actually argue with you on that point. I think it might actually be more important in fifth edition. It's just less stressed.
Sure.
They don't put as much emphasis on it in the rule books or in the way that they designed the rules. But I think it is actually more important that you have a balanced party in fifth edition than it was in fourth.
Okay, but you still can't tank in fifth edition like you could in fourth.
Well, no, because I'm a big tanky boy and I'm wearing all the armor and the bad guys go around me to get to the squishy people.
Which is very stupid. You need this person and they can't do anything.
It's perfect. That's why we had to get rid of Hunter's
marking feature.
Marking. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why we had to get rid of all the defenders marks.
Oh, because it's a video game.
Because, yeah, it's too much like... God, the clown came back.
It's like a video game.
No, but like... Yeah, fuck.
Yeah. No, anyway. But...
Fifth edition.
I think...
But like, you do need to have somebody to like soak up damage.
Right.
Right. Like, there needs to be somebody there that is going to pose like a viable threat to soak up damage.
That is a thing, but I think a bigger thing to worry about than like mechanically fitting into the table is making sure that, like, never mind the lone wolf issue, but trying to make sure that, like, socially your character fits in, like, I guess, like, personality or like alignment wise. Not alignment might be the wrong gauge for it, but like, everyone's had that party with the chaotic neutral rogue that just was whatever the fuck they want and is OMG bacon narwhal random. And
you got a fucking problem with my character, Josh?
Yep. This is how I'm airing out my dirty laundry in front of literally tens of people. But no, like, you just, again, if we've talked about this a bit before, but just not wanting to have like a selfish character as part of the table you're at, like understanding that there are social dynamics in your heavily social game and you can't just like be a self-serving character the entire time. And people, whether you like to admit it or not, I succumb to peer pressure all the time, like every day. So maybe understanding that your character probably doesn't want to anger five other demigods at this point, you know?
Well, and like, just being able to connect with other players in a meaningful way helps move the plot along, helps make sure that the story is still happening, helps make sure that the story continues to be about you.
Sure.
Like, there are no main characters in D&D.
Except for
mine. Except for yours. But like, if you're playing the bacon narwhal rogue, and I'm not saying that there's anything like specifically bad about the bacon narwhal rogue. You just have to understand that the spotlight has to be shared
Right.
And that, like, you can't just steamroll over your, like, quiet and terse paladin because your character is generally more loud.
Right.
But, like, the characters themselves, like, having characters that get along
mm-hmm.
is important, and having characters that are very different can be important.
Yeah.
And having characters that are very different but still get along is the hardest thing to do.
Oh, it's almost impossible.
Worth it. Worth it. But hard to do. Like,
yeah.
Some of the best games that I've ever had characters that were absolutely diametrically opposed to one another as far as, like, their personalities were concerned, and they turned into the best fucking friends and ran around to stab monsters and took their stuff.
Right.
But getting that dynamic to work, again, you have to, like, invest yourself into those other characters.
True.
And invest your character into other people in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
So. Flaws and drawbacks are a thing that I like to use to make my characters more interesting. And it's something that I've seen you do as well. You will give your characters flaws and drawbacks specifically to play into and make your characters a little tougher to play sometimes.
Yeah.
But I have also seen a lot of, like, flaws and drawbacks that do the exact opposite of that. And I wanted to touch on that as well. Because, like, I think that there's a general understanding that if you have a character who has a flaw, either one, the character is bad because flaws are bad and you shouldn't have flaws.
Right.
Fifth edition D&D. and two, having flaws makes you more interesting and more cool, kind of regardless of what that flaw or drawback is.
Yeah.
And I don't think either of those things is necessarily true.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, lone wolves, obviously a difficult one to work into a party. Characters that are racist,
yeah,
or misogynist, or generally ist, like, any of that stuff is gonna be a hard ask at any table.
Not at best, yeah.
Like, we have one character at my table who does have, like, a racism. His character is a paladin of the Silver Flame in Eberron.
Okay.
And they hate werewolves so goddamn bad.
All right.
Because of the association with werewolves, shifters, which are, like, seventh generation werewolves.
Right.
Like, my great-great-great-great-granddaddy was a werewolf. Yeah. They catch some of that.
Yeah.
Hate.
Yeah.
And so that character doesn't like shifters. But, like, we've played with that a little bit as, like, a dynamic thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, he doesn't like we don't have a shifter in the party, so that doesn't make things
too awkward
in that way. Yeah, because, like, that would fucking suck, being, like, the shifter character in a group that has a paladin that's like, no, your people are, like, literally evil. But, like, Thud, the character that I was talking about a couple days ago, the, like, shifter sports guy that one of our characters is dating, he is a shifter.
Right.
And so we've gotten to play with that a little bit and, like, look at some of the dynamic between, like, the people that really, really hate all of the shifters and think that shifters just need to die versus, like, his crew that's a little more, like, I mean, they're probably going to hell, but, like, as long as they're nice people, I'm sure it'll work out.
Right.
Like, but unless you're actually willing to, like, get into some of that nuance, playing a character that just doesn't like black people very much is not a way to go.
Yeah. Like, it's one of those areas that, like, I would understand if, let's say, a player was playing a dwarf that was just really wary of elves.
Mm-hmm.
But the line between, like, mistrustful of other races and just straight up racist is such a tough one to balance in a sensitive way. And I say this as a person who's playing at tables that are like 90% white.
And my tables aren't.
Yeah.
Like my tables have always been kind of an outlier, right? Like statistically speaking, my tables tend to include more women, queer folk, trans folk, and people of color than is generally happening in like D&D.
Right.
And so like I'm very keyed in to a lot of these issues, and I want to make sure that like my tables are going to be comfortable for everybody. So like knowing that there are people of color at my table, anything that involves racism is going to have to be treated with a lot of sensitivity.
Yeah.
But not every table is equipped to handle that.
No, that's definitely true.
But like there are also tables where I would trust for that to happen, right? Like if you and I were playing a game and one of us was going to make the decision to play a clan member, I would question why, right? Like I would want to know what story we're looking to tell with that.
Heritage.
But no, like I believe that there are stories that you can tell with characters that do have those flaws.
Right.
But you need to come at them in a certain way.
100%.
And it's a very select crew of people that I could see myself running that type of situation
with. Right, right.
And even just like within the game, like being a raging misogynist in a fantasy game where we don't have the same patriarchal traditions that we do here in real world Earth is weird, and it's probably going to make some of the people on your table sit back a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That got weirdly heavy for a bit there.
Yeah, that's fine.
I blame myself for that.
We can be intense once in a while, just to make a point that needs to be made when creating characters. Like,
yeah. I want to say for the record, because I feel like this is very important, don't be racist.
Oh, hey, yeah.
Just
good.
Just don't.
Good call.
Don't be racist. Don't be misogynist. Don't be homophobic. Don't be transphobic. Just be nice to people. Be kind.
Yeah. Be as kind as you would expect them to be to you. Right.
Yes.
Well,
maybe not, because like I'm sure some of those folks.
Sure. Maybe kinder. It. Maybe as kind as you hope that they will be to you. I don't know. At any rate. We want to give characters flaws, but like flaws that are, you know, easier to manage than like the immigrants or whatever.
Well, and like there are some flaws that you can take that I think are interesting, even if they are difficult.
Yeah.
Like playing a character in a wheelchair is going to make for some difficult considerations when you're dungeon delving. Like you're going to have to figure out how you're going to get downstairs, how you're going to get upstairs.
Yeah.
Because the people who made this dungeon, this like horrifically unfriendly environment, did not do so with accommodations for your disability.
No. So like I was, so backstory, I'm trying to work on a D&D summer camp at our store.
Mm-hmm.
And we were putting together an order of miniatures for the kids for, you know, one of the days is going to be, hey, you're going to pick out the miniature that you represents your new character, and we're going to paint it, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And in browsing for that, through our supplier, I saw that they made a set of wheelchaired heroes. They're only wizards.
That's less cool.
Yeah. Which, like, on the one hand, it's like, hey, there's some representation. But then it's like, well, a person in a wheelchair could be whatever they want. But then again, also, they have to go into dungeons and move that wheelchair around. And like, maybe this is just a set of miniatures made for people who want to roleplay Professor X. Because I get that it's going to be tricky to maneuver without the help of friends. But
I mean, like, you can have a wheelchair that is enchanted with Tensor's floating disk.
They would all have to be, I assume, if you're going to be, adventuring.
They could be. Like, I mean, there's also just, like, physical considerations. People can carry people downstairs.
I do like the idea that, like, there is a wheelchair-bound barbarian who's just raging his way through the dungeon.
Yeah. And, like, everything that I know about people who are in wheelchairs, like, that is absolutely a thing that you could and probably should do. Like, the fighter being in a wheelchair, like, literally just watch any wheelchair basketball game to gain an entirely new appreciation for the amount of dexterity and speed that people are able to get in these devices.
Yes, I too have seen Murderball.
Yeah, no, it's fucking crazy.
Great documentary. Look it up.
But like, yeah, if you are going to be playing a character who has a disability, there are ways to approach that that are going to make that interesting and fun, not just for yourself, but for the other players around the table. And you don't just have to be a wheelchair-bound wizard, you fucking ableist fucks that make miniatures, goddammit.
It's true. I kind of want to order a set just to, like, see if we can convert them into whatever these kids want. But then at the same time, I was like, oh, is a parent with a wheelchair-using kid going to send them to my summer camp where all of it is up a long flight of stairs?
All right, so maybe your store could use some accommodations.
We have none. We have absolutely no wheelchair accessibility.
Oh my god.
To the second floor. The second floor play space.
Okay.
Everything else is down on the main floor is fine.
Okay.
But like, yeah, like it's just and that's the thing with any of these like flaws that have to do with like real world flaws, I guess. It's like God, it's such a tricky line to do. Should I play a wheelchair-bound character just to get in that headspace? Probably not. I don't think that's fair.
Not to just get in the headspace, but like if you have a cool concept for a character that is in a wheelchair, and I can think of a few really cool ideas for characters that would be wheelchair-bound. If that is something that you legitimately want to play, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't. But I wouldn't do it just to get into the headspace.
Well, that's just it. And, right? And for me, it feels like anytime I'm going to do that, I am concerned that I'm only doing it just for like the novelty.
Right.
Not because I actually have a unique character. It's just like, this could be a rather boring character, but what if their legs don't work? Ha ha ha. Right?
I can engage tokenism.
Yeah.
To spice up my character concept. Yeah. No, and I've seen that. I've definitely seen some of that. And I've seen some character concepts that skirt around a disability in some weird ways that maybe don't necessarily make a disability.
Yeah.
Like, I had a player character. He wasn't mine. He was one of the guys I was playing with. I don't remember who the player was, so if I'm spilling tea without consideration, like, feel free to at me. The character was deaf mute.
Okay.
And communicated through psychic imagery.
Okay.
But not through psychic words.
Right.
Right. So it would be like hieroglyphs that would be transmitted into your brain.
I am familiar with the concept because that's how long distance communication works in Warhammer.
God damn it. This was like,
I'm so sorry.
I was just out of high school. I was like, this was 2005-ish that this was happening. And yeah. I don't think I even knew that Warhammer existed. So whoever it is who played the image of a river outside my window meandering slowly while the wind rustles through the trees that I can see just barely the tops over from my bed. Go fuck yourself.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot, Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.